When Themistocles, having led his battered fleet safely back from Artemisium, finally limped into Piraeus, he found to his horror that Athens was far from evacuated. There were many in the upper reaches of Athenian society, trusting in private assurances from the Spartans, who clung to the desperate hope that an allied army might soon be marching to their rescue. Not Themistocles. In a pass far distant from the Peloponnese, a king of Sparta and all his bodyguard lay dead, and there was nothing the Athenians could say or do now that would persuade the Spartans to commit more of their troops to a foreign field. The response of the allied delegates at Corinth to the news from Thermopylae could hardly have made that clearer. Unanimously, the Peloponnesians had voted to look to their own backyard. Even as the great king's outriders were closing in on Attica, an army of workmen, under the direction of Leonidas's younger brother Cleombrotus, was busy at work erecting a wall along the 5-mile width of the isthmus, hauling blocks of stone and bricks and wood and sandbags, not resting a minute, labouring night and day. Others had already set to demolishing the road to Megara, a narrow and precipitous corniche hacked out of the flanks of coastal cliffs, and effectively the only land route that an army could follow to, or from, the isthmus. With each landslide that crashed from the road into the shallow coves below, the Peloponnesians were abandoning Attica ever more surely to its fate. Even the gods, it appeared, were despairing of Athens now. No sooner had Themistocles returned to the assembly and frantically renewed the evacuation order than there came eerie news from the Acropolis. The sacred serpent, whose presence beside the tomb of Erechtheus had served generations of Athenians as an assurance that their city would never fall, was reported by its attendants to have left its honey cake uneaten and disappeared. Word swept across the panicking crowds that Athena herself had abandoned the city and was pointing them the way to the sea. All highly opportune for Themistocles, of course, as was, just as suspiciously, a second discovery, made even as refugees were surging to the coast with their luggage. The sacred serpent, it seemed, was not alone in having vanished from the Acropolis. So too had a golden gorgon's head filched from around the neck of that holiest of statues, the self-portrait of Athena Polias. Themistocles, loudly protesting his outrage at this sacrilege, immediately set to ransacking the bags of particularly wealthy citizens, when, as invariably he did, he found sacks of gold squirreled away among the luggage, he would impound them on the spot. These confiscations, combined with a whip-round among former archons, served to raise a substantial sum of money, a financial reserve that the Athenian people, now that they were passing into exile, might soon have little choice but to depend upon for their welfare. And all the while, as sobbing children were shepherded through the shallows by their fathers and mothers with wild white faces, and vessels of every description crowded the waters off Phalerum and Piraeus, time was running out. 6 days had passed since the forcing of the hot gates, and by the evening Athens stood empty. Their destination was Salamis. Here, across the narrow straits from Mount Aguileus, the Athenian people had resurrected a semblance, however ghostly and impoverished, of the city they had just abandoned. The elderly, whose wisdom in a time of crisis was rated an invaluable resource, had been settled on the island since the very start of the evacuation, along with the city's treasures and grain reserves. And now, most stirring of all, weather-beaten and battle-scarred though they were, they lay in readiness off the bays of Salamis, some 180 Athenian triremes, a wooden wall indeed. Well might Themistocles, pointing to the fleet, insist that his countrymen, even in exile, still remain citizens of the greatest city in all of Greece. A claim which he would be obliged to cling to as though it were a life raft in the hours that followed his arrival on Salamis. Athenian ships were not the only ones visible from the island. For the past 2 days, as Themistocles and his men had ferried refugees from Attica, the other allied squadrons had been lurking in the straits. That the Peloponnesian admirals had agreed to wait there for the length of the evacuation said much of the bonds of fellowship forged at Artemisium. Both their orders and their personal inclinations would have urged them to head immediately for the Isthmus.